WBEZ is supported by Shedd Aquarium, where animals, people, science, and conservation come together. Through community outreach, education, and research, Shedd protects the water that supports life in the Great Lakes region and beyond. More at sheddaquarium.org. Shedd Aquarium, for animals, for people, for communities, for love of waterkind.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Mayor Brandon Johnson is back in the studio for our monthly series, Ask the Mayor. This is when he spends the hour answering your questions and ours. There's a lot to get to today. Chicago tipped worker raises will hold after the city council failed to override Johnson's veto of a measure to freeze them. Lawmakers in Springfield are debating a so-called millionaire's tax to help reduce property taxes. How might that help Chicagoans? And what is Johnson's plan to make Chicago safer this summer? We also had a special treat this time around. I talked with Mayor Johnson in front of a live audience inside WBEZ's performance studio. Now, the mayor was fresh off a big city council meeting yesterday, so I started with some items on that agenda. First up, taxi fares. They're going up 20%, and it's a measure that Mayor Johnson supported. So I asked him why. Here's Mayor Johnson.
Well, listen, the taxi industry, of course, has been under a great deal of scrutiny and challenged with greater competition, right, with rideshare. And for a very long time, this is what taxi drivers have been calling for, to put them in a stronger and more competitive position. Making sure that our workforce is fully supported, I'm always going to lean in to ensure that the everyday people who make our city great and who help run our city, that they are fully supported. So this is a measure that places our taxi industry in a stronger position to be able to compete with the growing rideshare apparatus in Chicago.
Yeah, and only one alderman voted against this, which was Brendan Riley. So it shows sort of what you said, right? The stress that the industry is under as it does try to compete with Uber and Lyft, and not to mention, I'm thinking of less foot traffic too, downtown.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And so as we continue to drive transportation as, you know, a force to, you know, shift our economy to be far more vibrant, whether it's our public transportation system, whether it's taxis, all of it plays a part in our overall ecosystem to drive more and more people throughout all of our corridors throughout the city of Chicago.
We got a new zoning chair in the Chicago City Council. That's 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas. He's one of a group of alders who, as we remember, proposed that so-called alternative budget in the fall. It killed your proposed corporate head tax. Political insiders are framing this as a win for council independence and maybe a loss for you as mayor. But how do you see it?
Well, first of all, let me just say there was no alternative budget, right? 98.6% of the budget that passed were items that I pursued. There was one item that we had a different opinion around, which was the corporate head tax. Now, there are people who are oppositional to corporations and billionaires paying their fair share of taxes. They are on the outskirts, quite frankly, of where we're going as an entire country, as affordability becomes increasingly more paramount to developing strong communities. You know, as far as the city council is concerned, I remember a time when we had rubber stamp city councils, and what did that look like in Chicago? School closures, the shuttering of public housing, the closing of mental and behavioral health care, property taxes being raised multiple years in a row. So clearly having a rubber stamp city council has not worked out for working people. As far as people who, you know, work with me, even if I don't agree with them 100% of the time, it's probably why I was born a middle child.
How are you going to work with Villegas? Because he wasn't your first choice.
Well, listen, I've worked with them already. It's the reason why we have the 1901 project on the west side of Chicago, an $8 billion billion development. The Psi Quantum on the southeast side of Chicago, a $20 billion operation. We're building a brand new football stadium for our Chicago Fire. That is a multi-billion dollar development. Here's what's most important. I'm committed to building the safest, most affordable big city in America. I do not have to agree with someone 100% of the time in order for us to build a city that works for everyone.
Let's jump to the phones. We've got Noah in South Chicago. Hi, Noah. Welcome to In the Loop.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Mayor Johnson, I'm glad you brought up Psi Quantum because I'm actually a proud resident of the Bush, and I have a question related to the quantum development in the neighborhood. So for any listeners who may not be aware, the primary tenant of this quantum development is a company called Psi Quantum. And Mayor Johnson, I'm wondering if you're concerned at all that Psi Quantum just announced an agreement with Lockheed Martin in November that explicitly said they would use this technology in South Chicago to make better weapons. They also recently appointed two Trump Department of War appointees to their government advisory board. So this is a bit at odds with how the city framed this technology would be used. I'm wondering if you're aware of these developments with Psi Quantum, and if you have any concerns about how this technology will be used by Donald Trump's Department of War.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you for the question. Well, first of all, the Psi Quantum, the computing system there is ultimately designed to provide solutions to complex problems, everything from healthcare to traffic. You know, as far as technology being used to expand, you know, militarism, of course, I'm going to have concerns about that.
All right. Thank you, Noah. Appreciate your call. Let's get, since we're in front of this live studio audience here, why don't we throw a few questions from the folks in the room in the mix, in addition to our callers on the line. First up at the mic, we've got James from South Loop. Hi, James.
Hi.
So what is your question for Mayor Johnson?
Mayor Johnson, given the city's massive budget deficit, what is the one signature infrastructure project in 2026 that goes beyond just patching aging systems to fundamentally grow the tax base and drive business back into our neighborhoods?
Yeah, well, listen, you know, this budget challenge that we have in Chicago, the state of Illinois has one, states and all levels of government across America are dealing with a deficit. And part of the reason why we're dealing with a deficit is because we have an unfair tax structure. It's why I'm calling for a millionaire's tax, other forms of progressive revenue, so that we can ensure that there's equity and balance in terms of how we generate revenue. As far as infrastructure is concerned, yesterday we just moved again to refinance a bond that will save millions of dollars for taxpayers. That's going to go towards replacing the lead lines throughout the city of Chicago, repairing our water mains. I mean, there's a number of infrastructure needs that you know that we have that's really going to require us to be creative around our financing. This particular measure that I did put forth, this new bond issuance, again, it's going to save taxpayers dollars, millions of dollars, while also responding to the infrastructure needs that we're talking about, especially as it relates to lead lines being replaced and our water mains, of course, being strengthened.
Thank you, James. In Springfield, Mayor Johnson, House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch has proposed this so-called millionaire's tax. I got to hear your thoughts on this. It's a 3% tax on people who make over $1 million, and they say it could generate $4.5 billion. Given what you've said many times in the past to me and to Chicagoans, I assume you generally support this idea to tax high earners.
Well, look, you don't have to assume that. I think there's no secret that I fully support a millionaire's tax. Me and Speaker Welch have been in constant communications around this. This is not an ideal in isolation by the Speaker. We have been in repeated conversations around what can Springfield do to ensure that we're investing in our public schools? What can Springfield do to ensure that we're providing relief as it relates to property taxes? What can Springfield do to ensure that we're investing in infrastructure, right? To James's question, all of that really requires us to have progressive revenue. For so long in this city, this state, we've had an unfair tax structure. The bottom line is this: working class, low-income individuals have borne the greater brunt of the tax burden. Mm-hmm. Just have. And so, yes, I'm not only in full support of it, we have been in active communications with the Speaker, his staff, with many folks in the labor movement. Now, as far as the rates are concerned, I mean, I think there's always room to negotiate that. There are rates that are a little bit higher in states like Massachusetts, right, where they have, I believe, generated, or the projection as high as $8 billion. What we do know is this: the way our economy is structured right now, if we do not make a shift in the immediate future, our economies will not be sustained. And this is a case that you're seeing all over the country. So this is encouraging, right, that I've called for it when I was running for office. Mm-hmm. I've been calling for progressive revenue throughout my time in office, and I'm glad that I have a partner with Speaker Welch to help push this forward.
One proposal would give property owners $1,500 in the form of checks. This is to offset their property taxes. More than half of Chicagoans are renters. So do you think that's the right approach?
Well, look, there's no secret here that whether you are a renter or whether you're a homeowner, you're struggling to make the ends meet. There are many individuals who own property, two flats, three flats, that are not ultra wealthy, right? And so any relief that we can provide to working families is a worthwhile pursuit. What I will say, though, is if you look at what is most underfunded across this state, it's our public education system. I believe that people throughout the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, understand how important it is to invest in our public education. And 70% of residents throughout the state of Illinois have all walked in lockstep around how we need progressive revenue, supporting the millionaire's tax, and that our schools deserve to be fully funded. Just conservatively, the state of Illinois, $3.1 billion or so, mm-hmm. Underfunding our public education system. I know many state legislators, including the governor, are committed to changing that narrative, but that commitment has to show up in real substance. And that's why the millionaire's tax in particular, I believe, is one way in which we can do that. There's also a corporate head tax that I believe we were pushing for in Chicago that mm-hmm. would have generated $100 million conservatively. But there's also the digital ad tax in Springfield that's being debated. There's an opportunity for a progressive income tax. We have a unique moment where you have Democrats who are in charge throughout the state of Illinois. This would be the moment to actually build on this movement that's calling for equity and justice. And what better time to do that at a time in which affordability is the main demand that working people have.
Right. On the same token, I'm also thinking about the 2024 Bring Chicago Home referendum, right, which you supported, mm-hmm. but it you know, sort of failed to sway a majority of Chicago voters. It would have also imposed a higher transfer tax on high-end real estate transactions to raise $100 million. Would you support or push for this again?
Well, look, the context around the real estate transfer tax, I just want to just lay this out quickly. President John Strozier pushed for this in 1996, and he received so much pushback, he withdrew that revenue stream, and then those same detractors went to Springfield, forcing it to be a ballot referendum so that an executive like myself could no longer do what President John Strozier was attempting to do. Here's what I can say. I believe that there are far more people who understand what we need to do in this moment. And I'm confident, though, that if we take it before the people, they'll make the right decision. Here's what we also have to be prepared for. The people who oppose this will spend millions of dollars to confuse folks. Even with the real estate transfer tax, the Bring Chicago Home initiative, we're talking about a handful of individuals who have property over $1 million would have been impacted. 97% of the people of Chicago would have actually experienced a decrease. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the message that was being, moved. And so we have our work to do. It's not enough to just get it on the ballot. It's going to take all of us. Not one mayor, not one speaker can pass this, right? Every single state rep, every single state senator, if the governor is on board, if the county board president is on board, all of us have to do our part to make sure that the people of the city of Chicago throughout the state of Illinois understand the value of these progressive forms of revenue, and that if we want infrastructure, if we want education to be properly funded, if we want safe and accessible, reliable public transportation, we have to fund it, and we cannot keep funding government off the backs of working people.
Let's go back to the phones and hear from a couple of callers. First up is Sylvia in Vernon Hills. Hi, Sylvia. What's your question for the mayor?
Okay. Good morning, Mayor Johnson.
Good morning.
We spoke last June, and we spoke about accessibility to the Riverwalk. Maybe you remember that discussion, but there is an elevator between the Michigan Avenue Bridge. It's not in service, And you did mention that it would be accomplished, that it would be repaired shortly.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Sylvia wants to know why the elevator is not fixed.
So I'm going to pass that to my staff. Y'all need to make sure that that elevator gets fixed because we made a commitment to do it. So we're going to get an update for it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sylvia. Let's move now to Chelsea in Avondale. Good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Hi, Mayor Johnson.
Hi.
I was interested, which goes along with our previous question, at one of the No Kings rallies, you had called for a general strike, and May Day is coming up where there's a call for a national strike. And I'm curious how you plan to support Chicagoans during that day, and not only that, but take that momentum to make action.
Yeah, well, thanks for the question. You know, May Day has its roots right here in the city of Chicago around the 8-hour workday movement. Chicago has had a long history of standing for workers and the rights of working people at a time in which we've just experienced the largest transfer of wealth upward by the President of the United States of America at the expense of healthcare, housing, transportation, good paying jobs. This is the time in which workers have to express their voices. To your question, May Day is going to happen. I'm going to continue to work with President Davis Gates of the Chicago Teachers Union, Dr. Macklin Keene, who is our CEO of our Chicago Public Schools, bringing folks together, to your question, to figure out ways in which we can demonstrate support. So here's the bottom line. I've already directed my chief of staff to bring all of our sister agencies and city departments together to work out logistics to ensure that working people know what their options are, that the plan around the day ensures that we keep people safe. And I think to the larger point, if we're going to transform our economies, if we're going to push for the ultra wealthy to pay their fair share in taxes, voices of working people, everyday people have to rise up. And I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that families know what their options are on that day. And then I'm going to continue to push for progressive policies that ultimately lead towards transformation.
This is from Rebecca, who's not here today, but she did submit her question ahead of time that I'd love to read to you, Mayor.
Okay.
Her question was, Chicagoans are united on a few things, but we all hate potholes. What are the barriers from implementing a jobs program like Mayor Mamdani in New York to address some infrastructure fixes immediately during Chicago's construction season?
Yeah, so construction season is well on its way, and we've already implemented a jobs program. In fact, 2 years ago, we hired 75 young people who just graduated from high school for a summer program. And we said, listen, you can stay in streets and sanitation, or you can move on with your life. We won't be offended either way. Of those 75, 53, 54 of them stayed. The second cohort, we hired 100. 83 of them stayed. The first cohort, by the end of next year, 22-year-olds in the city of Chicago will be earning $90,000 a year to work for the streets and sanitation. We're going to continue to grow that. This is a program that folks have been talking about for a very long time. No one wanted to implement it. I did. And so we're moving in that direction to continue to make sure that our workforce is made up of individuals who love, who are part of this city. As far as the full operation, yeah, we're tackling it. All of our infrastructure needs. Look, the $1.25 billion bond investment, we just, again, issued another bond issuance. This is how, you know, these type of projects are funded. As you know, the infrastructure in Chicago has been neglected for a very long time. That's why, since I've been mayor, we've issued multiple bond issuances to ensure that we're financing and supporting in an equitable, just way, but that we're actually getting the work done. So I don't mean to, like, you know, sound like overly, hubris in this regard, but Mamdani is like taking bits from what we're doing in Chicago, with all due respect. I'm just saying.
That might not be the only Mamdani mentioned this hour. I just want to put it out there.
No, he's cool, but I'm just, the truth of the matter is we have been moving on expanding our workforce. So look, and just to that point, 10% of the country right now, They're living under executive orders that I passed. Chicago has always led the way. Sometimes other spaces get more attention. You know how we are in Chicago. That's why Ask the Mayor is important, because many people are not aware of the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So we're hiring young people. We put forth bond issuances. We're ensuring that our infrastructure needs are being addressed. And we're hiring kids who come right out of our public schools. And by the way, those young people will be earning more money than my wife and I combined. And we had almost 6 degrees.
Wow. Yeah. Listen,
Streets and Sanitation is hiring, y'all.
I'm with Rebecca. The potholes are a nuisance.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
we got to get them cleaned up.
Of course, that's a challenge that I think every major city has, and we are addressing that. We are.
Next question from Paul from Woodstock. Hi, Paul. Paul is at the mic right now. You're looking ahead to the 2028 presidential election, I hear. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The 2028 presidential election is still 2 years away, but which of the likely Democratic contenders do you think would have the best chance at success? And which ones, you don't have to say just one, would you feel comfortable endorsing?
Yeah, well, look, this upcoming election is going to be an important election. I think the work that we're doing in Chicago to demonstrate what the election has to be about, again, challenging those with means to put more skin in the game, to build more affordable homes. We're on pace to build about 10,000 by the end of my first term. Long way to go still. You know, so I just want to make sure that we're clear about what we need to make sure that this election is about: advancing the interests and the desires of working people. As far as the candidates are concerned, I have to be honest with you, it's an impressive crop of individuals that come from different wings of the Democratic Party, if you will. Obviously, I have more stronger progressive values that are centered around working people. You know, as far as one person in particular or two people or anyone in particular, I think it's still early because none of them have officially announced. You know, I will say, though, we had an incredible MLK breakfast this year where we invited the Vice President Harris to come and speak. She could have been anywhere in the country, and she decided to come to Chicago. So at the very least, we have to understand as Chicagoans, what we do in this political season will dictate what the 2028 election cycle is about. That's why May Day is important. That's why this millionaire's tax is important. That's why building more affordable homes, that's why it's so important. Standing up for the people of Chicago and resisting fascism is so important. But it's a really impressive group of people. They're incredibly smart. I don't think there's one that I would just X out. No, there is one, but I think y'all know who that is.
No, we don't. Tell us.
Look, I think... I don't think it's going to be a surprise to anyone. I have very deep concerns about the former mayor of the city of Chicago. You know, what he did in Chicago, from school closures to privatization to austere budgets. There was a boy who was murdered by our police officer, and it was covered up. I think that's disqualifying for me.
Let's jump to the phones. Thank you so much, Paul.
And I was polite about that, Paul, right? Okay, I was trying to.
Paul gave you a thumbs up there. Let's go to the phones. We have a couple people waiting. First up, Keith in South Shore.
Good morning, Mayor Johnson. Thank you, WBEZ, for having this opportunity and giving me a chance to speak in it. Curious about how we could expand bike infrastructure throughout the city to control vehicle speeds, considering that EV capacity for instant speed is dangerous, and give people more logistical options, especially since gas prices are where they are and probably not going down to where they used to be anytime soon.
Yeah, that's a great question, Keith. Thank you. So this is important to me and my administration. I believe this was a few months ago. I can't remember the days or the months where we just completed our first 100 miles of bike lanes. Mm-hmm. That's going to continue to grow. I'm an avid biker. I've been doing more biking indoors as the weather starts to shift a little bit. Riding my bike is important. It's good for all the things that you just mentioned environmentally, especially as, you know, these illegal wars continue to take place and causing the type of imbalance that we're experiencing right now in our economy as prices continue to rise in every aspect. I think biking is just one of those things and opportunities that will allow for a more greener, sustainable society. And as we work to repopulate Chicago, I know this is going to, you know, shock folks. I say it all the time, Sasha, we can conservatively fit 400,000 more people in Chicago. I know.
Where?
I know.
where are they going?
400,000 more people. Look, the vacancy that exists on the south and west sides of Chicago, it's actually quite severe. That's why we're building more and more affordable units. Our missing middle program with owner-occupied housing, where we're building 2 and 3 flats. There's an opportunity to continue to build up. We expanded our ADUs, right? So that went into full effect. So we'll be able to build more non-traditional housing structures, but housing structures nonetheless. Building more units near public transportation. We just, a few months ago, maybe at the end of last year, we removed some of the arduous requirements around parking spaces and housing near public transportation so that we can build more housing near public transportation without parking spots taking up all the room. But like, look, making sure that we're moving in multiple modes of transportation is critical, and biking is one of them.
Let's jump to Gregory in Hyde Park. Good morning, Gregory. What's your question?
Good morning, Pastor Johnson. I'm not allowed to call you pastor.
I guess it depends. If you really know what was going on in my heart when I was talking about Rahm Emanuel, you probably wouldn't consider me a pastor. But
well,
but
anyway,
yeah, so I'm okay being a pastor. And I actually think that those hours are better, and it probably pays better, too.
When you and Paul Vallis were running, I called both of you on Santita Jackson's radio call-in show, as you might recall, and I pleaded with both of you to take the leadership that you have and to change the social contract, to recalibrate the social contract between the motorists and the pedestrians, because in 1966, when I was 6, and for the last 60 years, all 3 million of us, because this affects every single person in Chicago, because all of us are pedestrians, is that the motorists as a group do not automatically all yield to provide safe passage across a major avenue or street, Western or Pulaski or Cicero or what have you. It's a dysfunctional breakdown in the culture. And octogenarians told me in the 50s they used to do it. Someone from Rio de Janeiro told me they do it there. It's something that, and in California where I finished growing up, which is where I got this, where I went to high school and college, I'm promoting the expansion of the red flag system. Evanston and Wilmette have a couple dozen intersections. We have only one at Belden and Lincoln Park West. It's low tech, it's affordable, it works, and it would reduce the amount of pedestrians that do end up getting struck and disabled and fatal and killed. We lose 25 a year.
So that's why Gregory's asking, why can't we do that?
Yeah, look, I believe it's a very interesting proposal. You know, this is something that, you know, I get a report every single morning, as I've shared before, about, you know, things that happen overnight, particularly, you know, once I go to bed. And every morning, you know, there's a certain level of tension that rises because, you know, you don't think about it in other roles, but the people who experience harm in our city is something that I think about all the time. And though we have done some good work to, you know, create a stronger barriers so that pedestrians and walkability becomes more of a regular, consistent structure in our city. We have reduced that type of death and violence in the city of Chicago by about 29% for motor and traffic deaths. Still a lot more work to be done, and we're going to continue to explore ways in which we can make Chicago not just the safest and most affordable big city in America, but the most walkable big city in America.
So back to Zohran Mamdani. You share a lot of political ideologies with the New York City mayor. He's another, of course, progressive big city mayor. He just marked 100 days in office. So he's, of course, still in the honeymoon phase. We'll recall that he's also pledged to make buses in New York free and acknowledged last week that it's actually not feasible in the first year. So I wonder if you would support something like that, making public transit free to some or all Chicagoans.
Well, I mean, look, I think we're all clear that public transportation has to be affordable, accessible, it has to be safe, reliable. And we are moving closer in that direction. Our ridership is up, and we're getting back to the type of, again, ridership that you know, we were experiencing prior to the pandemic. You know, as far as ways in which we could highlight particular groups that rely upon public transportation to make it more accessible and you know, available for them. I think we could continue to explore that. The number of students that move around in our city that rely upon public transportation, I think there are ways in which we could work and partner with Springfield to create a system that doesn't burden everyday people.
Let's get to another question from our in-studio audience. This one's finance and budget related, and it's from Drew from River North. Good morning, Drew.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Chicago's credit was further downgraded earlier this year following a tumultuous, shall we say, end-of-year budget process in December. So thank you for your work there. But looking forward, what steps do you plan to take to both reduce reliance on one-time revenue sources and then going forward improve the process itself?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think let's start with the process. My administration has made it very clear that we want all stakeholders at the table, not just Alders, right? So we've had these budget roundtables. When we have these budget roundtables near your wards and communities, I encourage all of you to come out. We do one specifically just for young people under the age of 25. I want to hear from everyone because I think that's the best way in which we can structure our budget around the values that the people of the city of Chicago actually express that they want. And so I'm going to continue to work with Alders. I'm going to continue to work with stakeholders to have an open process. Many of the provisions that we've put forward come right from the budget roundtables, right? So that's just one thing around process. As far as the, you know, our credit, look, the city of Chicago is still operating. It was very clear that the credit ratings were concerned about the corporate head tax being removed, which was not a one-time revenue source, with more speculatives that they were comfortable with, right? And I'm working hard to make sure that we're implementing this budget, but I expressed that there was really some severe concerns about some of the projections that Alder people made. And the credit ratings expressed that. So I think moving forward, as we continue to build this operation around budget roundtables, I'm having conversations with all members of city council. And then I think the last thing is pushing Springfield. You know, the city of Chicago, like municipalities across the state, we have very limited levers in which we can pull. That's why you have seen property taxes increase all over the state, because for municipalities, that's the one thing that they do have control over. It's why I have not raised property taxes, but we are pushing for a millionaire's tax. What I need from all of the listeners today and throughout the city of Chicago, call your state rep, call your state senator, call the governor, and let them know that we have to have a progressive revenue stream for the state of Illinois, but specifically for the city of Chicago, because we are the global capital of the world. And regionally speaking, our economy impacts the world from Detroit to Atlanta to the northern part of North America and Canada. So I know that was a little long-winded, but I just want you to know that there's a process, there are concerns that we have, and we are pushing for sustainable revenue to build out an economy that works for working people. Thanks.
Thank you, Drew. Mayor, we never got to the latest update on the subminimum wage in Chicago.
I thought we were done with that.
Nope. That's the lower minimum wage for folks who aren't following, for tipped workers. The city, with your support, outlawed this, and more than half of Alders wanted to reinstate it because they say it's too big a burden on businesses. You vetoed that move. We found out yesterday that the council did not have the vote to override your veto. So as a result, the ban on the subminimum wage remains. Is this a good thing for Chicago?
It is. Raising wages for working people is the best thing that we can do. In fact, I heard the governor recently say that we have to raise the wages of working people. The Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, who is a Democratic nomination for the United States Senate to replace Senator Durbin, she called for $25 an hour. My question to Democrats, which one is it? Is it $12 an hour or is it $25 an hour? Now, my belief is very straightforward. When you're talking about an industry that is overwhelmingly made up of women, and particularly women of color, in the city of Chicago, Chicago Public Schools in particular, where the number of households that are headed by working women, the time in which affordability is the number one issue in America, to cut their wages, it doesn't make any sense. I find it to be just irresponsible. So I'm going to continue to work with the business community as well. We have issued over 700, I believe, grants to small businesses throughout the city of Chicago, about $600 million with about a $1.8 billion total impact. And so I don't believe it's healthy for us to pit working people against small business owners. There's a pathway that we created that unwrapped, that gradually increases the wage over 5 years. That was a part of a larger compromise. I'm always going to remain open to conversations as we implement this important policy. As things progress and change, some of the things that are beyond our control, I'm happy to always relook at ways in which we can strengthen the work to make sure that working people are protected.
So I'm going to go right to the phones, Mayor.
Let's do it.
We'll start with Dixon on the southwest side. Hey, Dixon. Good morning.
Good morning. So my question is, I understand that the city is trying to shut down Ford City Mall, which is probably overdue. But last summer, there was a proposal to turn Ford City into a warehouse. My question is, what would it take for us to see some community-oriented use of that space, considering that we already have more than our fair share of warehouses on the southwest side?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, there are some significant concerns that we've had over some time about that particular location. As far as, you know, what it could be, I would be very much open to a community discussion around what that space could look like. I think that there are many opportunities to build more affordable housing. That, you know, I'm going to just kind of stay in that lane because it's so critical. But there are many different, you know, resources and services that people need access to, mental and behavioral health care, affordability, you know, safe spaces for our young people to hang out in. So certainly we'll be open to that discussion.
Thank you, Dixon. Next up, we've got Alicia in Belmont Cragen. Hi, Alicia. What's your question for the mayor?
Hello. Thank you. And hello, Mayor Johnson.
Hello.
I am a small business owner, and I run a pet care business, and you know, there's a lot of prices going up on everything everywhere and running around the city a lot. The gas prices are also really affecting me. And I guess I was really surprised and upset when I went to renew my city business license and it went from $250 to $1,000. And just wondering, you know, what was the thought behind raising it like that so high? And I knew nothing about it. I hadn't heard anything. And I'm just wondering, you know, what you can do to help small business owners. And I mean small. Most of us in our networking group have 10 or less employees. Mm-hmm. So these kind of hikes are really detrimental to us.
Yeah, well, thank you for that question. And thank you for your commitment to, you know, the city of Chicago. And I know there's a lot of strain and pressure for small business owners. It's why we put forth the $1.25 billion bond. So I would encourage you to take a look at the small business grants that we have made available, the Cut the Tape initiative that we put forth for small businesses to streamline the process so that, you know, small business owners are not losing money because they're losing time because of, you know, bureaucracy. I think in terms of that process that was played out in our budget process, and, you know, to your point that there are costs that are associated with life right now, and some things are beyond our control, particularly around the illegal tariffs and these endless wars. And all that is impacting us, and coming up with local solutions to be able to mitigate some of that harm, that's something that I'm committed to doing. And if you have other ideas within your network that you could share that the city of Chicago can do to help strengthen, you know, you all's role as part of the soul of Chicago, we're definitely open to that. But take a look at those grants that are available and other processes that have overwhelmed small businesses. We've worked to cut that time in half so that businesses are not losing time and money.
Thank you for that. Now, you know, since the last time you and I spoke, Mayor, about a month ago, you have seen significant turnover in high-level staff. So big picture, tell us what's going on there.
You know, look, what's going on is that we're building the safest, most affordable big city in America. You know, the ultimate position that is still intact is the mayor's office, right? Government has not stopped. You know, look, I'm just going to be honest here because the only way I know how.
Yeah.
Every single administration has had turnover. It's not unusual, right? I think that there's a special attention around, you know, turnover, if you want to call it that. People move on. I move on from them. You know, it's
amicable.
I think
it's also just the cluster sort of happening all at the same time.
Well, because,
or so it seems.
You know, right. So, I mean, would it make a difference if it was spread out throughout the year? I mean, listen, in most cases, most people couldn't even tell you who the last deputy mayor that anyone had in any department. No one would know. I would be surprised if people actually knew who the staff members were of any administration. Here's what's most important. Government is still working. We're still investing in people. There will be folks who, it's a natural course. Government is hard. And so, you know, people transition and move on. We just appointed Kenya Merritt, who worked for three other mayors prior. She left. Did anybody know that Kenya Merritt left government and came back? You know, so what I'm saying is, I think that I'll just be very direct. I think people make big deals about things that actually most Chicagoans don't ever ask me. Like when I'm on Ask the Mayor or when I'm in the neighborhood, no one says, hey, Mayor, who are you thinking about for your deputy mayor of such and such? It doesn't come up. What they do ask about is, will we have enough funding to make sure that our public schools are fully supported? They ask me about infrastructure. They ask me about transportation. They don't ask me about staff. They don't. Because I was elected to build an economy that works for everyone, and I'm committed to doing that.
Earlier this month, Chicago's outgoing Inspector General, Deborah Witzberg, she said that your administration is, quote, reflexively hostile to oversight. You maintain that you are committed to good governance and transparency. What steps are you taking on that front?
I mean, there's a number of things. Whether it's, you know, what we're moving through our, you know, ethics committee, I'm always going to remain open to transparent and open government. There's nothing that has been brought to our attention that my administration has done that anything that was either, you know, investigated or what was speculative. There's nothing in my administration where any corruption or impropriety took place while I was here. So I actually am concerned about how the outgoing Inspector General has politicized this position. I don't want to bring up old news, but, you know, there's been a gift closet in the city of Chicago for 40 years. I didn't invent it. I didn't. And I actually think it was reprehensible. And quite frankly, I think it was distasteful.
So you're referencing was sort of put on blast.
Kind of put on blast. I mean, every single mayor has had this closet. Essentially, when people offer up things to the city of Chicago, it goes in there and it gets logged. And there was nothing that was discovered that was somehow, you know, irresponsible. In fact, we even opened up the process even more to your point of what we're doing. I'm like, fine, since everybody knows that since Eugene Sawyer, this thing has been here, we've even opened it up for people to actually come and see it. Guess what? No one even comes. Because no one comes up to me. I've been all over the city of Chicago. The things that that this particular person has raised has never, it doesn't come up.
Right. So it's clear. She's been very critical of your administration. So I wonder how you will work then, or what do you want to say to Chicagoans about how you're going to work with the future Inspector General?
I'm going to continue to work with whomever is in that position to ensure that we have open, transparent government. It's why I pushed back on the process at CHA that was done behind closed doors without public information. I called that out. I have no problem calling out impropriety in this city. I ran on that platform. I've taken arrest in this city because of the police brutality, because of the shuttering of schools, because of the dismantling and firing of working people. I've literally went on a hunger strike to make sure that people are seen. Right. And so I think it's actually not only disingenuous, but I find it to be woefully politicized in a way that doesn't speak to my values. I have nothing to hide. There's nothing surreptitious about my administration. In fact, you've seen an open city council. We have far more transparent processes than we've ever had. So I'm committed to doing that work.
Back to the phones. Here's Uzo in Bronzeville. Good morning. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Mayor Johnson, for taking the call. My question is, why can't we have a zero tolerance policy towards the teen takeovers? We have the city council that passed the snap curfew ordinance that was rejected by you. But meanwhile, we have kids that will intentionally gather in the hundreds without any purposeful activity to pursue. And we don't really even allow adults to gather with organization in the hundreds in public spots without a permit. And I feel like it's starting to normalize antisocial behavior. So would you reconsider that veto to the snap curfew ordinance?
No, I won't, because there's no evidence that a curfew is going to get the type of results that you're speaking of. First of all, this is a situation that's happening all over the world, right? And this is why I've said this is not just Chicago. This is literally happening all over the world. We have to have accountability as well as opportunity. The teen gathering that took place in Hyde Park, there was one that happened a week prior, mm-hmm. of which there were multiple teenagers who were arrested and multiple citations. And then it still happened. It's proof positive that just simply putting, you know, these accountability mechanisms in place that they're going to automatically lead towards changed behavior. It's both and. We're not, you know, taking a no hands on approach. It's why I called on parents and the full force of government to show up. So shout out to the students at Kenwood Academy that are pushing back against their peers. Shout out to the principal at Kenwood Academy. Thank you to the families who put together a parent takeover. And check it out. Parents were out there and young people still showed up. And we did have to intervene. And so this is not something that is cut and dry. We've had the type of policies that you are calling for. We've had those in place before, and it did not lead to safer communities. I'm not going to continue to do stuff that hasn't worked because folks are afraid to do the stuff that can work.
Got just a minute with you. Tell me more on that same token. What is the administration and the police department doing to keep Chicagoans safer this summer? We're happy shootings and homicides are down compared to a few years ago. But what else?
Yeah, there's a lot more work for us to do. We have to continue to invest in young people. I'm going to continue to promote more detectives, of which we've done. We're going to make sure that we're promoting and supporting our CVI. We're going to do more of that. Those are our community violence intervention workers. We're going to make sure that we're going to continue to ensure that our Detectives Bureau is fully resourced. So between CVI, Detectives Bureau, investing in mental and behavioral health care, investing in programs that reduce domestic violence, all of that work is still working. And so thank you for that. I do want to just make sure really quick that my team looked at the elevator situation.
Yes,
Riverwalk,
for Sylvia.
And for Sylvia, because the system was built in an insufficient way. When there's heavy rainfall, the elevator fills up with water and up to 3 feet, and so it makes it inoperable. So our engineer team is designing a new drainage system to solve that issue. Meanwhile, there are ADA compliant ramps to connect residents to the Riverwalk on the east side of State Street and the west side of Clark Street and, of course, the west side of Franklin Street. So that work is working, Sylvia,
okay.
So soon enough.
Thank you, Mayor Johnson.
In other words, Sylvia, I didn't build it, but I have to rebuild it. But I got you, Sylvia.
I think she's happy she got her answer. Mayor Brandon Johnson, folks, thank you so much once again.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Dan Tucker, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. And thanks for listening.